Hello, friends, and welcome back to the second hour of Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle. Purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a much better place. Sorry, I got a little frog in my throat, but hopefully I'll feel better tomorrow, because tomorrow, on Saturday, October 19th, I'm scheduled to give readings at the Tacoma Psychic Fair at 5405 South Puget Sound Avenue in Tacoma, just off of 56. Then next week, from October 23rd to 28th, I'll be going back to Mount Shasta again. So many people were healed in September when I was at Mount Shasta that I received many requests to go back, so I'll be going back. If you'd like to go with me, the cost is just $200 per person, and just send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, or you can call me on my phone number at 509-750-9793. And without further ado, I'd like to welcome Michiko Hayashi, the wonderful and beautiful director of the Emoto Peace Project from Tokyo, Japan. Michi, thanks so much for coming on today.
Hi, Ted, sweetheart. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Your website is www.emotopeaceproject.net. And you were the administrative assistant to Dr. Masaru Emoto, who is one of the world's most spiritual men, up until he passed away on October 17, 2014. And you now give lectures around the world on the healing power of water, and also for the Emoto Peace Project. Could you tell us about the Emoto Peace Project?
Oh, thank you so much. Yes, I'm happy to. Emoto Peace Project started when he announced that he was going to make a children's book of message from water. That was announced on the 26th of May in 2005. When he was giving his keynote speech at the United Nations headquarters office in New York. Mm-hmm. He said this book will help all children around the world about the truth of water and how water and our consciousness and the and everyday words that we use are deeply connected with water, and that whatever we say, whatever we think, whatever we hear, see, they are all affecting water. And as we are 70% water, and so is the surface of this earth, if our thoughts, our words change to loving and appreciating and kind and compassion and respectful, and then all children will be adults, and they will learn to be living in harmony within themselves and with surroundings and earth. So
it's a simple message, but a very powerful and beautiful message too, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And because anyone who learns about this, this shows the law of universe. It's a law of attraction.
Yeah.
So it really shows through this water and water crystals that whatever we say, that the words are negative or the words are positive, then the water creates forms of formation of crystals accordingly. And that's what's happening within our body and environment too.
Could you tell, I have a lot of listeners in Germany, could you tell what you'll be doing here in a couple of weeks in Germany and the kind of presentation you'll be giving there?
Oh, thank you. Yes, I will be going to Bad Soden in Germany. It's probably about 30 minutes from Frankfurt. There will be Dr. Pollack is a chair, and there will be a water conference on chemistry and biology. Right. And physics on water. Mm-hmm. And I will be giving my presentation on the experiment we did at the laboratory on tuning fork of 528. And mm-hmm. So I will be there between 24th and 27th of this month to give my presentation and to participate in this beautiful and wonderful water conference.
And you did a scientific study, didn't you, regarding
I
thoughts
did.
and consciousness? Tell us a little bit about that. I think that was really fascinating.
Positive thoughts really affect, or any kind of thoughts affect water. And when we direct positive and loving, beautiful thoughts to, or even worse, or showing even worse to water, water responds and forms beautiful. The water receives that vibration or frequency and creates beautiful crystals. Whereas if when we expose or direct negative or ugly or angry or scary thoughts or words or intention to water, then water cannot form beautiful crystals. So here we need to know that we are 70% water, and all around our room or wherever we are, there's vapor water. And water is always forming that crystals. They have at the molecular level.
Wow. Fascinating.
So, you know, if we want to stay, live in peace and happily and bring abundance and health, good health and beautiful life, we want to be using positive and loving and respectful thoughts and words and everything. So
now, I have a lot of listeners in the Los Angeles area. Tell us about the How to Water Conference, February 8th and 9th in Los Angeles.
We're planning to do some. It's a water, How to Water Exposition Expo.
Wow.
That I will be showing many beautiful water crystals that is reflecting the beautiful music. And along with that, we will be playing beautiful music there. And also I will be talking about giving presentation on water and how water absorbs music, thoughts, words. And we can also change those crystals or of water just with our thoughts or music or words. So that's something basically that I will be doing.
Oh, that's great. That's
great.
Thank you. Now, you also give Hado sessions too. How does that work exactly?
Hado session. Okay, thank you for asking. Hado session is that, Dr. Emoto was doctor of alternative medicine before he started to get into study on water. And at that time, he was healing. He healed more than 10,000 people with this Hado machine.
Right.
Hado means vibration. And that's one of the major, bless you, Ted.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's one of the major the division that we have in our company. But using Hado machine, we detect the root cause of the problem that people have. And then, because everything in yin and yang, positive and negative, even like with the Hado codes, vibrational codes, shows that love is certain frequency, but the opposite of love is greed, because we want to possess it.
Wow.
So that's the same vibration, but yin or yang, positive or negative. When we are showing this greed, we infuse or imprint the positive side of this greed, which is love. So that's how we balance out people's vibration. And so we use the Hado machine to detect the root cause of the problem and imprint the positive side of this problem, the vibration of the problem, so to neutralize everyone's health and problem. And that's how we can heal people.
And don't you go back like seven lifetimes sometimes with people?
Or we go back to the past life or subconscious mind or past life or DNA and all that that come to our DNA or what we have in subconscious mind, and we detect that also heal.
I don't know of anybody that does kind of work that you and your office does.
Thank you so much.
There just isn't anybody out there. I mean, all the other Everybody else is more third dimensional, but I really think the kind of work you do is fifth dimensional. You go into the fifth dimension and then help people in a spiritual way, and then that translates. Because I know that Dr. Emoto, before he passed away in 2014, he had a very high success rate, didn't he? He treated like something like 10,000 people and was able to, 90% or something like that?
Very successfully.
Yeah.
And we even do, even now we do that, and very successfully too.
Sure.
There was a person in England, in UK, who has been going through attack by, what was that? Negativities.
Right.
She was in from the other side or something. And
yeah.
she has been going through a lot of problems with no energy, very low energy, no desire to do anything.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So I didn't do that. This is really big. So I asked Yoshi, who invented this Hado machine, evolved version, and he made her water with her photograph. And I've been in touch with her, and she said she's been drinking it. She's already changing it. She has been making the diary that she can report it. So, you know, there are many people who have been being healed. So I'm really happy that we are being able to help people.
Well, I have firsthand experience from that, because a couple of months ago when I was in severe pain from my teeth, you mm-hmm. programmed some hotter water for me. It took the pain right away. Took it all away.
Oh, thank you. It's really easy.
It really helped me.
Yeah, water really, can do that.
It really helped me, and it's the sort of thing where you don't realize it. Now, you're also giving some lectures in Switzerland here coming up?
Yes, I will be giving my lectures in Switzerland on the 27th for Steiner School for Children, and 29th. In the evening, that's a joint event with my dear friend Eve, who is beautiful pianist.
Oh yeah,
we will be doing that. He will be playing the beautiful intuitive piano.
Nice.
Right behind while I'm giving my presentation, and then on the 30th we'll be giving another presentation. And I do have series of presentations. So if anyone is interested, please email me at Hayashi, Hayashi, at hado.com. Let them know where to come and who to contact.
Now, I know there will be people in the Los Angeles area who would like a hado treatment from you in February when you're here. Plus, you'll be here in March for the Galactic Wisdom Conference. I know there will be people as well who will want a hado treatment. So could you give out your email again?
Okay.
Please, yeah.
Thank you. Yes, it's Hayashi, my last name, Hayashi, at hado, hado.com.
Oh, good. Well,
I could take some
hotter water today, actually, but I'll be all right.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. I'll be all right. Well, we got a couple of minutes left. Is there anything else you'd like to say to wrap up your wonderful interview today?
Well, thank you so much. When we had this massive, really destructive typhoon, the storm last weekend, I asked on my Facebook for all the people around the world to pray and send much love and gratitude to this typhoon so that, you know, because this happened because of the reason. The Mother Earth has observed a lot of negative emotions, angers, all this from all the humanity. And now we have to just learn how we can live. And now, yesterday I saw the picture of that huge
Are you there? Hello? Well, it looks like we've lost her there. If we can get her back. If you can hear us, please call back in. Well, that was Michiko Hayashi of the Emoto Peace Project out of Tokyo. Her website, again, is www.emotopeaceproject.net. She has these beautiful children's books, which she distributes, and she'll be giving a series of lectures coming up. Oh, good. You're there. Okay.
Oh, good. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
But anyway, okay, I wanted to tell you that there was a huge cloud of typhoon that covered half of this earth, and that was the shape of dragon cloud, dragon. And dragon is the deity of water.
Oh, interesting.
And it really affected that typhoon, went all the way, that dragon cloud went all the way to Russia. And we heard that Russia had a lot of problem that was caused by that typhoon. So I can even show you this photo of this. It's amazing. I just want everyone to know that we want to live always appreciating what we have and loving yourself and others, and respectful and compassionate.
Great. Well, you do beautiful work, and on behalf of all my listeners worldwide, thank you so much for all your beautiful work.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, Ted.
No one else does what kind of work you do on this planet. So, anyway, I hope you have a wonderful trip to Europe, and thank you so much again for coming on today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me, Ted.
All right, Mitzi. Have a beautiful day. Thank you so much for coming on. Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye-bye.
That was Michiko Hayashi of the Emoto Peace Project from Tokyo, Japan, commemorating the passing of Dr. Masaru Emoto. He passed away on October 17, 2014. He was one of the world's most spiritual men when he passed, and Mitzi is continuing his work. Now, what I'd like to do is to go on to talk to James Redfield, if he's available, okay, great. Wonderful. James Redfield is the world-famous author of The Celestine Prophecy. The Celestine Prophecy helped people... It's one of the amazing books. It's one of the amazing books that helped me on my back in the 1990s. It was $1 million show, a million dollar best copy, anyway, he's an amazing man, and he's written a series of insights. He's got 12th insight all together, and he's ready to go. James, are you there?
I am, Ted. How are you?
Oh, hey, James. Oh, so good to talk to you. So good to talk to you, James. Thanks so much for coming on the show today. How are you? How have you been?
I've been well, and really excited about the Celestine Prophecy Inspiration Tour that we've been on, and that's really been a kick. I think a lot of people know by now that the Celestine Prophecy was re-released, and it is we've added a long afterward, which is the reason that I'm on the road and doing this inspiration tour. Where the afterword is aimed at millennials and the younger and their children. It's how to stay awake, how to find your inspiration energy in this world, and that's what we do these workshops on the inspiration tour. So it's been a lot of fun, and taking a short break now, but we will just got back from Boulder. Doing an event, and that was fun. You know, it was. I think it was down here in Florida. It was 97, and when I landed in Boulder, it was about 19 degrees. So that was really goodness! Snow on the ground. You know, it's been fun, and you know, it's a new time in the world. You and I have talked about it before, and that's. You know, when you when you look at all that's happening, it's you realize that with these two new generations coming online and interested in consciousness, you know, they're meditating more than any other generation. Millennials and their children. So two new generations that are already the majority population on the planet. They're already having a lot of effect on consciousness.
Right.
And, you know, I can say it's a very, very positive effect because it's about finding one's true inspiration in the world. And that's, you know, it's hard to do, hard to manage the money, it's hard to manage, creativity. It's hard to stay in your inspiration energy. But,
right.
You know, my message is that we know how to do it. You know, it's out there in the world. How to live this kind of inspired life, and it takes some thinking and some work and some changing of reaction patterns. But it's happening. It's already happening, and it's fun to just fan the flames out there.
Right, exactly. Well, I remember you talked about the millennials last time, and that was the market that you were young people coming in their late 20s and 30s now looking for spiritual direction. Tell us a little bit about that if you can.
Well, it's really fun. Millennials are, again, the largest single generation on the planet. And
right.
It's a huge number of people who are, the majority of them right now are starting to pass 35. The leading edge is around 38, 39, 40. And as you know, we've talked about this, as you know, it's 38 to 40 is when, you know, every generation asks the larger question about life. You know, you've figured out you've gotten a job, you've got the work thing going, you've got a coupling going and kids, and you've got that routine. And at about 38 to 40 is when you say, well, wow, this is hard work. Is this all there is, you know? Is this all there is, or is there something more we're supposed to be doing on this planet? Is there something more beyond just surviving and doing our duty with children and with others around us in our community? But what about that real thing that we feel is our truth to tell on the planet, something we can do? So when you have a huge generation starting to ask that question, it has an impact on the consciousness of the whole planet. And when you have their children, the older millennials have children facing college, moving into all the questions students ask, well, how do I get educated, especially in this environment? How do I get educated without, you know, spending a fortune? You know, how do I find that thing I want to do in the world? And at the same time, you know, we talked about this, at the same time, you have the baby boomers out there who are also reaching a time in life where they are having, you know, they're retiring or semi-retiring. And they're looking for something to do that, you know, that maybe they didn't get to. You know, that was the thing that they want to do that leaves a legacy, that helps these newer generations. And what happens is that all that asking of larger questions means that the whole, it creates that sort of air in the world to ask those questions. And when everybody's, more and more people are asking, you know, you start to get answers. You start getting answers collectively, new books, you know, new creative projects about how can we help this world that seems so contentious in many ways right now, and how can we leave a personal legacy and find that self-satisfaction of doing that thing, telling that truth that is ours to tell out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, your book, you said it's been republished again, James?
Well, the Self-Seeing Prophecy was re-released with a new afterword. Uh-huh. And, you know, it's the afterword is really talks about, well, once you read The Self-Seeing Prophecy, and as you know, the book was a phenomenal pass along book and has been for over 20 years now. So it's never ceased to be a pass along book out there because it's a map for consciousness. And, you know, the insights in that book are archetypal. You know, I didn't make those things up. What I did was I looked out at the culture and at that time, you know, there's such a cresting as the baby boomers reached that 30 and 40 age point. They were asking the larger questions. What can I do in the world? And now 20 years later, another generation is doing it too. So their millennials are just passing the book around already. So the publisher called me and said, what are you doing with selfing? Take it off. And we found out with some research that millennials are passing it to each other again, because it, you know, these insights are archetypal. They're universal. They speak to how one can find inspiration and self-actualization on this planet, in this dimension. You know, how does the creative life really work? What can we do to open up to our own greatest inspiration and the truth that we want to tell? So the book is about that. Three generations are now asking those questions at a higher level, and so it's very inspiring for me to be able to talk about it with three generations asking the question.
Right, right, amazing, yeah. Do you have some events coming up, James?
Well, we're taking a little pause. Our next event will be in the February event will be held at the Conscious Life Expo in L.A. Mm-hmm. And again, anybody can, you know, if they want to join us, anybody can just Google my name, James Redfield, or the Selfing Prophecy, or the Selfing Prophecy Tour. And they'll get the whole lineup. After February, we'll skip to Sedona, Arizona, in April.
James, and you'll be at the Conscious Life Expo, really, in Los Angeles?
That's right.
Oh, I'll be there too, my friend.
Oh, good.
Let's have lunch.
Get to see you again. Yeah.
Good.
That'll be
good.
Fun. So this, you know, that's a place where, you know, there a lot of information will be shared about consciousness and about, you know, all the other questions about life, you know, including the UFO file conspiracy and cover up and all that, including the
right,
you know, secret government and you know, where do we want to go from here in terms of openness and you know, a disclosure, not just about UFOs and that side of things, but about what the CIA is doing in the world and what social media is doing to suppress thought and reform. And, you know, there's just a lot of shenanigans going on at the corporate level.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, my message about that is we don't have to, we can't go into hate trying to argue, you know, yell at some politician on television, you know, because that just makes them grow larger, you know.
Right.
All we
right.
have to do is stay in a consciousness in the space, you know, that's love based, so that what happens is that we just shine a light on the darkness and really what we see out there now is the corruption just exposing itself.
Sure. You know? Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. Well, will you be coming out to the Northwest again sometime soon?
Well, I don't know when. I'm always open to an invitation from any group that can you know, pull an event together. We'll just see what happens. These are very spontaneous, these events. Very often I'm just invited by a sponsor to hold an event in that town or the city somewhere or state. So, you know, I was in I was in Portland already, but have not been to Seattle. So
ready
to go, you know. That'll be a fun, we'll work that in.
Well, good. Good, James. Tell me, are there more insights coming? Will you be having more insights? Because I know you had quite a few.
Well, we, you know, and, you know, these insights are, again, it's breakthrough revelations that that the human race have discovered. And so when I wrote the first book, you know, I could identify nine insights or revelations about how the world really works metaphysically. So that was the first book, you know, through nine insights. And then the 10th insight, you know, my publisher was, he was pushing me, wanting another book. And I said, look, I'm documenting insights that are coming into the culture, into the human awareness. You know, these are archetypal revelations that the whole mass of humanity is designed to pop into, and as we pop, I start talking about it. So, but very soon, you know, the 10th insight, in my view, came into culture, because the 10th insight is the knowledge of the afterlife. You know, what happens before life and afterlife on this planet.
Sure.
You know, what occurs, and you can remember, this was in the late 90s when all of a sudden, we had all this near-death experience, information, and research. You know, Daniel Brinkley and a lot of other writers were started to talk about their near-death experiences and started to document exactly what's happening in the afterlife. You know, the afterlife. You know, but we're not floating around on a cloud playing a harp. You know, those are medieval pictures that are in everybody's head. But the afterlife is actually a real place. And from the testimony from the near-death experience participants, we know how it works. You know, we plan our life before we come. We have certain learning curves that we want to reach, but we also have some truth to tell. And, you know, in our life, the birth vision we all have. We can all remember it. That's why when we can remember this inspired thing that we want to say or do, creative world, you know, it's really a memory of what we had planned before we come. So but I couldn't write the 10th Insight book about all that until I realized that, hey, this breakthrough revelation that heaven is real, afterlife is a real place, I write about that? And that's what I did with the 10th insight. The 11th insight also came at, about 6 or 8 years later, and that's when, you know, in somewhere around 02 to 06, we had this collective revelation about the power of intention, right? The movie The Secret came out, Self-Fulfilling Prophecy movie came out. You know, we had all this discussion about just how powerful are we in terms of creating our futures, and how does that work? So, of course, you know, once that was into the collective mind, you know, I started to summarize what our revelation was, you know, in the book, the Secret of Shambhala, which was about the power of prayer or intention, and what one of the things we do in the workshop is we talk about how do you strengthen your intention. In other words, if you get in harmony with all these insights, which are now evolving into abilities, okay? Now we can have a kind of a rush of energy when we grasp the insights. But sometimes when you go home and or go to work and your boss yells at you or something, you can lose that awareness. But what's happening now with these new generations coming along is right. that they're integrating this into a real ability to hold that level of consciousness, that level of insight and inspiration energy, okay? So it's an amazing thing that we're moving from insight and energy, that temporary consciousness, to the ability to sustain this consciousness. The information's out there. The ability to fire up our brains in that way is you know, that energy's available, but we have to institute it and sort of change our reaction patterns. So that's what we're talking about in the workshop, how to change your reaction pattern so that you keep your inspiration energy and your clarity about who you are in life at a higher level of inspiration. And nothing could be more fun for me to talk about
that. Well, great. Well, tell me, James, what inspired you to start on your spiritual path?
Well, you know, I was in a kind of psychology curriculum. You know, I mean, I've always had this sort of curiosity about what was spiritual experience really. You know, how can we define it? How can we define spiritual experience? You look at across all these religions, and you know, I looked into every one of them. I'm trying to figure out, okay, well, how do we do that? Every religion has this ideal experience, this connection with the divine, inspirational source. You know, all these ideal things, but you know, you don't see it. It occurs sporadically through every religion, so. I've started to look at it psychologically, almost like a science of spirituality. And I wanted to just find a way to describe it so that people could move into not just a belief system, but actual experience that was the evidence for spiritual consciousness. So, you know, I was thinking about all that, tried to do it from an academic point of view, and when I realized that it can't be discussed that way, it's boring.
Right.
It's theory. No, you know, it's just theory. So that's when I realized that what I needed to do is talk about these insights that I believed were the true evidence for experience, for spirituality, you know, in a story. So that's how I got inspired to write this Celestine Prophecy novel, which was about my life and my experiences, but other, you know, the experiences the whole culture was having as they moved into this higher consciousness on the planet. Right. So that started the series of novels, and you know, I just tried to, every time I thought that humanity was having another insight into spiritual, into the nature of spirituality, that's when I wrote another book. So the four of them are out there. The 12th inside, the last one, is an integration. And of course, that's what we're really doing now, because you can't, you know, go out your door and you know, go to work and, you know, interact in your mission. You can't be thinking about, well, what applies to this conversation I'm having here with my boss, the first inside or the second. You can't think about all that. What we do, though, is we integrate reactions so that we stay in this higher consciousness all the time. Mm-hmm. And over time, what we really know how to do now is how to stay in that consciousness and not let anything knock us out of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all hit brick walls, seemingly have challenges and crises. The idea, though, is never interpret a life event negatively. That's just a discipline. You know, you just find the silver lining in every event, no matter how traumatic it is. And what that does is It keeps you in a consciousness that allows you to be guided away from most trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're intuitively guided, and that intelligence, once we develop that, what happens is that we can live in this synchronistic flow where our higher creativity is moving all the time. Now, you know, I have, and the thing about this is we know how to do that, okay? And it hasn't been tried on the planet in any organized way yet.
Right.
Information is out, but so many people are cynical about it. Okay, yeah, well, you know, there are bad things that happen to everybody, and there's no way to interpret those things positively. Yes, there is. There always is. It doesn't mean that you're somehow, you know, not taking a loss seriously, or you're not really in touch with the reality. You're hiding from truth, really feeling your pain, or any of that crap.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's
all that are just words that people say.
Mm-hmm.
What we can do is stay in this higher consciousness, and if we're always positively interpreting the synchronicities in our life, what happens is that we stay in this higher consciousness. And when we stay in that higher consciousness, and this is another ability we have, we are guided around trouble, okay? We hit so many brick walls because we're trying to live our lives with our, you know, ego strategy part of ourselves only. If we listen to our intuitions, we can find ourselves guided around what would have been, a big roadblock in our path.
Right.
So it's really interesting to talk about this now, and to see so many people relate to it now because they've fallen in or somewhere experienced this higher consciousness. And that sets up to say, well, that's why, you know, I want to live in that consciousness all the time. Why do things knock me out of it? And all you have to do is teach yourself to react differently to what happens in life in order to optimize the flow that we have. We're guided in life. The whole world, this whole mission is designed to be a dream machine for us.
Uh-huh. Wow.
But we have to step into alignment with it. And those steps into alignment, for instance, karma. You know, there is a karmic structure to this planet.
Right.
And if you think you can do anything you want to anybody and have a happy life, you're just kidding yourself.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, 95% of the people on the planet do want the best for everyone.
Right.
They want the best for everybody's children. They want the best for their children. They want, it's not that hard to do. Only when we get insecure do we get to a place where we're violating that karma, where we have we start to have negative karma, and it's when we start taking from others, whether it's energy or recognition or anything we manipulate for. What happens is that if we take in any way, then we draw more takers into our life, and that's when we have trouble. That's when we get misled ourselves. So if you mislead somebody else, you're going to be misled, and that slows everybody down.
Sure.
But if you're a giver always, you know, it's a very simple karmic structure, and I believe anybody can prove to themselves.
Well,
and
I like
taking it, it's all around giving. If you're a giver, you draw more givers into your life, you have more synchronistic flow, more high moments.
Well, I like what you said a few minutes ago, James, about looking for the silver lining in everything, even for traumatic experiences, because there always is, even though it sometimes doesn't seem that way at the beginning. And if you do that, you get away from victim mentality where you actually learn from experiences and become a better person as a result.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all shaped to move us from the dark side, which I call manipulating and ego, sort of battling with people, and, you know, hate, you know, creeps in and all the lower emotions get involved. That's the dark side,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
sure.
that just grows. It's going step one. If you just take one little step into the dark side, then
right.
there you are, and you're hitting your growth, your inspiration energy falls, everything falls. But if you mm-hmm. stay, if you're a giver, and you realize that that is the light, you know, that's mm-hmm. the consciousness that, and it's light. It's light versus dark in a real way, because consciousness, mm-hmm. the world lights up, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it, mm-hmm. you see beautiful color. Colors are more colorful. You know, your inspiration, the things you could think of to say are elevated, you know?
Mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. and it's all about learning to stay on the light side. And again, mm-hmm. we have to deal with our, you know, it's psychotherapy, but it's one that you can understand yourself.
Right.
Proof to yourself
right.
is real. You know, you
mm-hmm.
can give up
mm-hmm.
your control dramas and give up your coping devices that are negative. And, and so I run around talking about, we know how to do this. You know, when mm-hmm. when Carl Jung, you know, the disciple of Freud, took psychoanalysis into a spiritual realm and into consciousness, you know,
mm-hmm.
It changed everything and created what I call the human potential movement.
Right.
Because after
mm-hmm.
that, it was, wow, we have all this potential for a higher consciousness and a better life.
Uh-huh.
And we, you know, 100 years later, we figured
right.
out how to do that in a way that makes sense to anybody who's ready to be self-aware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, I got to thank you so much for writing your Celestine Prophecy book, James, because you helped me on my spiritual path back in the 90s. I remember reading the book, and I was an attorney back then, and it really kind of opened my eyes to trusting your intuition and following your hunches. And you talked about a new age, and thank you for writing that. I know all of my friends feel the same way, that you know, I mentioned that you were going to be on my show today, and they said, oh, yeah, Celestine Prophecy. I read that, and that really helped me on my spiritual path. Everyone has said the same thing, and they always had good things to say about how you helped them, and you helped me, too, back then.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, I was just trying to write about the new consciousness that was emerging, and that's why I think people passed it along, and it went global, went viral, when we didn't even know what that meant.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's fun now to be out talking about it and saying that's nothing. You know, whatever people felt after reading that book, that's just the first step.
Right.
You know,
right.
There's a whole another level of energy that can be maintained now, strictly
right.
because two new generations are coming in
right.
with this quest to find it themselves. You
sure,
know?
Sure,
and that raised the energy, the consciousness of the whole planet.
Oh yeah,
so at the time
absolutely.
Where some people may think, oh my goodness, you know, civility's gone and everybody's lying and manipulating, and because they think they're saving the world, and they have to tell all these lies and so that they can save the world. You know, that's just about 10% of the population making all the noise. The rest of the population. Is seeking it right around in their community, opening up to this higher consciousness that sustains and inspiring.
You must have felt a little bit like being out in the wilderness when you first wrote your book back in the 90s, James.
Well, when I was first writing about it, is that what you mean?
Yeah, when you wrote your book back then, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I was a baby boomer.
Uh-huh.
Reaching 30, not age 39. Well, yeah. Not quite in the 37-ish range
mm-hmm.
with all this. You know, there's an astrology for that wake-up time in life. You know, it's Pluto in the sky 90 degrees from where Pluto is in once birth. So it's a real thing that happened. And I was going through that, and I was trying to get this book done before I got to be 40, because I didn't want to do it. You know, it was my time to get it done, right? And so I holed up, quit my job. I isolated myself in a one-bedroom apartment, had a fireplace, so I burned a lot of wood. And it just, you know, I just wrote it. I just sit there in the room with light up. I would get inspired, but it was a matter of, you know, getting it down on paper. And you know, anyone out there who's wants to write, it feels like that's their mission, to write something. I always encourage them to get it written. Have a beginning and an end, and write it until you have a beginning and an end, and then start to read it like a reader, and it'll come to you intuitively how to make it better and better.
Yeah,
and, it's a lonely job. Yeah, it's a lonely job because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Any advice? I'll follow your advice. I've just written a book on contacting spirits and angels on the other side, and I have a publisher in Germany who's going to be publishing it in both German and in English. Okay. And I got through the first draft, now I'm writing up the exercises. Part two of the book will be exercises to contact the other side. So if you'd like, I'd love to have you review it if you want, James. I know you're busy, but...
Yeah. Well, that's okay. Send it to me. I have several points of advice for people. One is is to have a beginning and end, start,
right,
and don't stop until don't start revising it. Don't go backwards and start revising it. Keep going. Right. If you want to make a note at some place about what you should have done earlier, make the note. But don't go back and rewrite until it's all the way to the end.
Oh, okay.
And then you got something. It'll be terrible.
Right.
It's always terrible for every writer. It's terrible.
Right.
But
you
got it down there, and then you get intuitions. The other thing that I always say as a tip is that you need to test it. There's a reason they test movies with audience, right? You got to test your books, too. You got to test it. Once you think it's done, take it, make some copies, and make 25 copies of it, and hand it to friends of friends, okay?
Okay.
And ask them to read it. Not friends, but friends of friends that will agree to read it, right?
Uh-huh.
And then go back and check in with them and say, okay, how's it going? Well, you know, I stopped on chapter 4. Well, why'd you stop? Inquiry. Why'd you stop on chapter 4? Well, I just got other things were going on, and I just never got back to it. Well, that means there was a lag in energy in the book on that chapter, right?
Right.
So
right.
You have to go back, and you have to trust synchronicity, right? You just send it.
Right.
You're just giving it to 25 people. But you gotta say, okay, that's the right 25 people.
Right.
I have to take this very seriously, whatever they say about this book. And that's what I did with Healthy. They either stopped reading it at a certain point, or they got to and that's the main thing. Where did you stop reading if you stopped? And what did you think about it?
If you ask them,
did you tell anybody about it? Well, no, I didn't think to do that. Well, not what you want them to say. So what you do is you go in and fix these places, because you'll be intuitively led to what might be dragging or what might be confusing or what might not be clear in some way.
James, my friend, we've got about 30 seconds left, so sorry about that.
All right, that's the tip. Yeah. That what you want to do is keep revising it until somebody says,
good.
Okay, if I give this to my friend, you want to get a pass along result.
Yeah.
So keep revising until you get that.
James, thank you so much for coming on my show today. I want to ask you a couple of questions off air. If you don't mind, I'll call you back here just after the show. But thank you so much for coming on today, James. I really appreciate it. And everyone listening today, I hope you all have a beautiful weekend. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye, everyone.